My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We just need a whole culture shift. We just need new energy. We need discipline. We need structure. We need a follower or a leader so we can follow that leader as players. And that's what we need. And, you know, we got to have, you know, the love of just not just the game of football, because that's what we do, but the love for people and the people in this organization. We all got to be on the same page. There's too many different mind and too many different ideas and too many people thinking that they have this power, and it's not like that. You know, we need someone that stand tall, and this is who we follow, and this is the way it go. Like I said yesterday after the game, and we're going to do it this way to win.
All right. That was Deshaun Watson on Monday, 6 days ago, which would have made that Monday the 4th of January. He is still currently the quarterback of the Houston Texans, but a whole lot of stuff has happened since then. I'm joined, as I often am, by Drew Hodgson, also a former Houston Texan, played center for the Texans, a former Arizona State Sun Devil. Drew, look, you don't work in football. You don't follow it 24/7. Are you as shocked as a lot of people were when you started seeing tweets about potentially trading Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, I think just as someone who, like you said, is on the periphery to some extent, it's a story that's big enough that is shocking to me.
Right.
As just kind of a bit of an outsider at this point.
So this is where I am on it. I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast are obviously in Houston or Houston Texans fans, but even they sometimes have a hard time keeping track of the soap opera that's gone on for the last 2 years. I think people outside the city of Houston, and what Drew and I are talking about is that there were rumors by Mike Florio that Deshaun was raising the subject with his friends about the prospect of being traded. And that's as far as we knew. Nobody made too much of it. But then within a day or two this week, Ian Rappaport had tweeted out that Deshaun Watson is extremely unhappy with the organization after owner Cal McNair informed him he would be involved in the GM and coach hiring process and provide feedback, but then did neither in the hire of Nick Caserio, the new general manager for the Houston Texans. That all happened. So this was all in the course of 1 week. It was a little bit of a whirlwind. Deshaun Watson, according to Ian Rappaport, has not spoken to Texans brass in the last few days, although they have tried to call him. Cal McNair, the owner of the Texans, when they introduced Nick Caserio, said the same, said that they hadn't talked in the last several days or since the hire of Nick Caserio. Deshaun Watson had at least one conversation with Cal McNair, maybe about more vague items in the search. And I'm going to try not to give too much information here because there's a whole lot. It's been a soap opera here ever since Bill O'Brien really took over, bit off way more than he could chew back in 2019. So, nice. Drew, what I want to do is go back to April 2nd of 2019. Does that date ring a bell?
It does, although there's a laundry list of dysfunctional issues that you can bring up probably around that timeline. So feel free to walk me through it.
Okay, this is where we're going to start with. There'll be a couple key names in here that I want people to remember if they haven't heard these before. But they're big players in the drama right now with the Texans. April 2nd, 2019, the Texans hired Jack Easterby as the director of team development. And you might hear that, and you might say, okay, I didn't know there was such a thing as a director of team development, but I guess the Texans hired this guy. And I think that's largely how it was received at the time. I can think back to April of 2019, and we may have discussed this a little bit on air because it was interesting. This was a guy that they were pulling from the New England Patriots. He'd been the character coach with the New England Patriots. And you look him up on YouTube, and he's this spiritual guy that's got a whole lot of motivational videos, and he's, you know, very religious, but he talks to players. All these players from New England have stories about how, hey, he helped me out through a tough fix in my life, and he'd go play basketball with me, and we'd talk about life. But he also worked with Bill Belichick, and he was brought into New England after New England had the whole Aaron Hernandez scenario, and Bill Belichick realized, oh yeah, I don't have the deftest of touches with human beings. Maybe we could bring somebody with a deft human touch in here. And Jack Easterby was that guy, and it seems like he did a pretty good job as the character coach in New England. I think Bill O'Brien in April of 2019 thought, you know what? I myself have been known to every now and then lose my shit. Excuse my language. And maybe Jack Easterby could be good with the human stuff here. So he brings Jack Easterby in, but with a promotion. We find out later, according to Jason Lockhanfora, is making $3 million a year, which is a hefty sum. That's a handsome sum. So that's what we have. So that's in April of 2019. You go to May, June 2019, 2 months later, the Texans fire the general manager, Brian Gain. Brian Gain had only been there 18 months. Brian Gain had a good chunk of time left on his contract, and everybody's wondering what the hell is going on. And there was some criticism of Brian Gain already, like any general manager. We were concerned that he didn't seem to be capable of trading up or down in the draft. Some of the moving and shaking. We had our second guesses about, and the Texans offensive line still seemed to kind of be in a shambles. But all within the course of 1 week, really, I'd say probably just a few days, the other drama that unfolds is that the Texans were going to try to hire Nick Caserio, who's Belichick's right-hand man, director of personnel, been with the Patriots for almost two decades. The Texans were going to try to hire Nick Caserio. So two names so far, Jack Easterby and Nick Caserio. The Texans were going to try to hire Nick Caserio away from the Patriots. Patriots said, hold on, bro. Jack Easterby was just up at a ring ceremony at Bob Kraft's house recently. Just as you guys are firing your general manager, and you think we're going to think that, oh, yeah, Jack Easterby and Nick Caserio must have just been chatting away. I claim tampering, and I accuse you of it, Houston Texans. So the Texans say, "Whoa!" We pull back a little bit, like, "Hey! No way! No, it's all cool, baby. We'll just we'll settle in." And you figure, okay, well, the Texans will probably hire a general manager now, right? No, they don't. They don't, Drew. What happened, Drew? You know this part.
Yeah, I think at this point, I could be mistaken, but I think they actually decide to just give more authority and control to the guy who perceivably was responsible for a lot of the disarray that's already happened.
Yes.
So they gave Jack more control to Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
And then maybe unknowingly started to set the stage for sort of an undermining of additional authority by Jack Easterby.
Right. So all this is going on. And you know what? Look, hey, Bill O'Brien has pretty much complete control at this point. And he probably always already did. You know, I mean, he did get somebody got the GM fired. Bill O'Brien would always claim he knew nothing to do it, had nothing to do with it. Jack Easterby, we're starting to kind of look at it as like, this guy's some kind of hatchet man or something. What the hell's going on? He comes in, and 2 months later, the GM is gone. At the time, Drew, I started telling people, keep your eye on this Jack Easterby fellow, because this is a little bit weird. This is when people started to say, is this like a Littlefinger type of guy, like from Game of Thrones? And a lot of people thought I was overreacting. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back here. I've seen this scenario play out before. You got this religious guy who somehow threw away and using a lot of religious jargon, because that's – I had one conversation with a person about Jack Easterby. And I said, well, you know, he's like a really religious guy, which is cool. And he said, well, he uses the vernacular of a religious guy. So just keep that in mind.
Sure. Yeah. He's an eccentric figure in a sea of generally overly professional figures. So he tends to stand out maybe.
Yeah. And I can tell already I'm going too long on this. So here we'll go. Bill O'Brien becomes the coach and de facto GM. Jack Easterby becomes vice president of football operations. Bill O'Brien makes a couple of really controversial trades, trades away Jadeveon Clowney for less than perceived value. Then he trades two first round picks and a second round pick to Miami for left tackle Laremy Tunsil, wide receiver Kenny Stills. And then there was a swap later on, but whatever. This lopsided value will continue to be a theme in most of Bill O'Brien's transactions. The Texans went on to have a good regular season. They then blew a 24-point lead in the playoffs last January to the Kansas City Chiefs and looked like there still was a vast chasm between the genuinely good teams in the NFL and the teams that were maybe scratching, you know, clawing at the door, trying to get into that genuine category, genuine contender category. After that game, Deshaun Watson, who's been the good soldier all along, never bats an eyelash, never complains or anything, he professed his undying love for Bill O'Brien, and I'm not exaggerating. He literally used the word love. He said, I love that man, in the press conference after that game. He's sticking up for Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien, the de facto general manager, who was then named officially the general manager last offseason, the 2020 offseason. He trades away DeAndre Hopkins, right? Which in Houston, here, I blame this specifically for our sometimes haphazard response here in Houston to the coronavirus, because all of this happened, the DeAndre Hopkins trade, as the coronavirus was just taking hold in the U.S. Drew. I feel like everybody else had a three-week head start on it because we were all wrapped up in this ridiculous, pathetic, disgusting DeAndre Hopkins trade for which the Texans got back almost nothing, a second round pick. And they didn't get back David Johnson. They took on David Johnson in his $12 million contract, $12 million guaranteed dollars on his contract. Up to speed so far?
I'm with you. Yeah. Okay. I've managed to stay on top of what you're saying.
Okay. So aside from DeAndre Hopkins, O'Brien then goes on to make a bunch of other moves. They bring in Brandon Cooks, who's a longtime, long admired object of Jack Easterby's affection. Brandon Cooks was in New England when Jack Easterby was there. Jack Easterby just loves Brandon Cooks. And I'll be honest with you, I like Brandon Cooks. I think Brandon Cooks had a good year this year. He's no DeAndre Hopkins whatsoever. They also gave Randall Cobb a three-year deal. On defense, they lost DJ Reader. Didn't replace him with anybody. Didn't really do much at all to help a defense that was really struggling over the course of the second half of last year. So we get to training camp this year. They gave Deshaun Watson a really nice contract, second highest paid quarterback in the league, $39 million per year. You figure Deshaun's going to be here a while. You know, with or without Bill O'Brien, Deshaun is going to be here. Texans start out 0-3. They had a ridiculously difficult schedule to start. They had Kansas City, Baltimore, Pittsburgh. And at that point, everything was going off the rails. There was a report that Bill O'Brien and J.J. Watt got into a huge blowout argument in practice. And then the Texans go on to lose to Minnesota. At the time, nobody really realized that Minnesota's defense was going to be the disaster that it was. It's Mike Zimmer, after all, right? You figure they got off to some hiccups, and maybe with health, they'll get back. But the Texans start off 0-4. Bill O'Brien loses his job. Deshaun goes on to have one of the weirdest years that a really good quarterback has ever had when he's had a really good performance. There are all kinds of stats that show that no quarterback has ever performed as well as Deshaun Watson on a team as bad as the Texans. They won four games, but Deshaun gets the passing title. Really, in a lot of respects, has the best season he's ever had. And in the midst of all of this, this season, where you have Romeo Crennel acting as the interim coach, and Deshaun Watson, you know, having Tim Kelly, the offensive coordinator, working in complete autonomy, a Sports Illustrated article comes out that's basically an expose. I know people on the team think it's a smear campaign, but it's an expose of Jack Easterby, where it paints Jack Easterby as this character who kind of is really adept at gaining the trust of people in power and sowing discord amongst different people in different departments in the team, while at the same time really raising the eyebrows of a lot of players on the team. There are players in that article that said that they wished Cal McNair would just see that Jack Easterby is pulling the wool over his eyes. And it paints this kind of sordid image of a really dysfunctional situation. And I would say, I think some people are skeptical of that Sports Illustrated article. I know that some people in the organization think that it was a smear campaign against Jack Easterby. From people I've talked to, it actually seemed kind of tame. There are people, including former employees, but there are people that really don't know what the hell is going on with that team. So the entire time, Deshaun Watson is performing well on the field. In press conferences once a week on Wednesday, he's keeping up a positive demeanor. There were actually a lot of people that criticized Deshaun for being too happy this year. Looked like he wasn't sad enough. Like, he was doing all the right things every step along the way, until finally at the end of the season, he gives that quote where he says there needs to be a culture shift. And mind you, at the time, Jack Easterby was the interim GM. He's a Patriots guy. Bill O'Brien, departed Patriots guy. He says we just need a whole culture shift. We need new energy. We need new discipline, and all those other things that you heard in that clip. But I think culture shift is the word that really stuck out to me. And within a few days, what does ownership do? They go and they double down on the New England Patriots culture. And I think that's where we are right now, is that that Deshaun Watson is reportedly unhappy. The trade discussions with his buddies, I don't know what to make of that at this moment. I just know that right this moment, given time to kind of have conversations with people and think about it, I'm more alarmed about the potential and the reality that you've got a potential trade situation here. I don't want to be clickbaity here. This is a potential reality. And it's freaking me the hell out that we somehow got to this point that we did. All right. What about all of I gave you a lot right there. I don't know how long that took, but I feel like I gave you a lot. I think, what's your first question that pops into your brain given all of that?
Well, there are a handful.
Okay.
But to your point, I think first of all, that was so impressive. I mean, you must be lightheaded after that.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about Bill O'Brien's job as general.
No, manager. You personally, just the ability to lay all that out in one stream of consciousness. And I actually was able to understand it all.
Okay. Well, that's good, because usually what'll happen is I go on in other cities on the radio, and usually it's like I'm on it for a 15-minute hit and they'll ask me what's going on. And honestly, it's impossible to explain. I try to do it in three or four sentences, and I don't know how to approach it anymore, because for an outsider looking in, I feel like they look at this situation and they think, oh, typical spoiled professional athlete, just wants his own way. Didn't they just pay him? Like, no, Deshaun is a guy that has played the part of the good soldier this entire time. He's been the organization's best employee by far. The organization's best employee, and has not complained about a single thing. The Texans, the Texans, meanwhile, have had three general managers in 3 years. Yeah. So when that employee steps up and says, hey, something is wrong here, I don't understand how people's first reaction can be, whatever, just shut up and do your job. The guy who's hiring the general manager is on his third general manager in three seasons. So I don't think it's out of bounds for Deshaun to say, hey, maybe consult me next time, because I know a few of the pitfalls of what's gone on here.
An employee who is on a team that has underperformed relative to a lot of his peers and their performance, and to people who, you know, now that I'm, to some extent outside of that Texans bubble, and even, from a fan's perspective, is that, a lot of the players on this team have done their part and outplayed really the expectation of their performance. I'm looking at like JJ Watt. You're looking at DeAndre Hopkins for a long time. I mean, these are guys who really never did much to rock the boat at all. Mm-hmm. Relative to what they could and relative to a lot of other teams who in similar positions with what was going on in the front office, with what was going on with the coaching staff and some of their teammates would have done a lot more to be difficult to manage. And those guys were always very easy to deal with. Just sort of the run of the mill contract renegotiations and management of personnel and interpersonal relationships with the staff. So I don't think he's done really much of anything to cause a stir in Houston. If anything, you almost wonder, is he not leveraging the power that he has already as a guy who's in his role to take advantage of what's going on right now for a team that is, to say dysfunctional? I mean, I very quickly was looking on the thesaurus.com for more potent verbs outside of dysfunctional to try to figure out what you can say, because I think it's a lot deeper than that. It seems, you know, for someone who just is coming in and absorbing kind of the timeline that you laid out, I don't know that it really does it justice, to be honest with you.
The dysfunction sometimes, hey, lots of organizations are dysfunctional. The Patriots are example A number one. When it comes to just human relations and stuff like that, the Patriots are kind of, it's a dysfunctional business. You know, it's highly competitive. You got a whole lot of alpha males crammed together in the same room, and there tend to be issues. But there's something about this desire to replicate the New England culture that every time you try to do that, because the people that have been successful outside of New England seem to almost conscientiously say, okay, we'll take some things from New England, but we're going to do a whole lot of other stuff differently. You know, Thomas Dimitroff was a GM for the Falcons for a long, long time. And, you know, when he stepped away from the Patriots, He went his own way. He was decidedly his own man. He's a freaking vegan. He's a bicyclist. He wears the little tights and everything. So he's very non-Belichick like. So, but
very non-New England things. Yeah.
So I think with Deshaun has been through this. He's seen what trying to mimic the New England culture has done. And again, it's this Jack Easterby guy does so many weird things over there, including addressing the team. When players would go in to meet with O'Brien, Easterby was always there, like sitting in the corner, just around, you know. So he's O'Brien's right-hand man, and yet at the same time, I get the sense that he thought he was also going to be, hey, I'm the guy that's buddy-buddy with everybody. And players look at that, and you think, I can't. Well, like, where am I able to trust that? You know, I don't get exactly what this guy is or who he's supposed to be. And that he also, like Easterby, if you're trying to mimic the Patriots organization, I don't think you can do it with this Easterby guy, because he's unlike anybody I've ever heard or seen of before. Like, I don't think he has all that much understanding or knowledge of football, and yet he involves himself in everything, like every department he's there.
Oh yeah.
So I think when Deshaun saw that Caserio got hired, it almost has nothing to do with Caserio's actual credentials, because Nick Caserio is very credentialed. He's got a lot of, he has nothing but positive reviews. You know, I talked to one longtime personnel guy who said, you know, the thing about Caserio is he's all business all the time. He's, you know, you probably don't want to go grab a drink with him or anything. He's going to be in there tunneled away in his office watching film. He is all business. What makes me nervous is that I feel like Belichick and guys like Caserio look at Easterby as something that he perhaps is not. That Easterby is this guy that claims to be and sells himself as, oh, I'm the balm for all of your human relationship issues. I'm going to come in and I've got a way with people. A lot of the guys that matter on a football team, they see right through it. So I think that the people in charge are thinking like, oh, wow, this guy's got a deft touch with players. This guy just understands. There are a lot of guys on the team that see right the hell through it. And look, Easterby got to New England, I think, in 2014, 2015 or so. It's not like they didn't have success after Easterby got there, but they were already a successful organization. Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, Bill Belichick, they had a lot more to do with the remaining Super Bowl championships to be had than Jack Easterby did. And by the time that Tom Brady chose to leave, basically, I mean, mutual parting of the ways, whatever. By the time Gronkowski retired to get the hell out of there, I don't know if it was the best culture. You know, the Patriots way wasn't necessarily something that you might try to mimic by the time those guys left the building.
Yeah, there's just so much to unpack there. I mean, I think that the common thread throughout this entire timeline that you laid out to where we are now is that, you know, at every pivotal moment, a decision was made that seems to be the less obvious, more outside the box decision, which doesn't make it the wrong one. But what happens is that it just raises the stakes on what the outcome is at every single turn. So, you know, even the move to begin with, you know, giving more power to Bill O'Brien after a handful of trade decisions and personnel decisions that maybe were not what you think were on the surface what the team really needs. But the assumption there is Bill knows his team. He knows, you know, firsthand what this team is lacking outside of maybe what the fans think, outside of what, you know, prognosticators and pundits think that are looking at the team from the outside. And then surely it didn't work out. And then you double down on another decision being made that was a little outside the norm and giving more power to a guy in Jack Easterby. And these decisions over time start to really pile up. And so the stakes are exponentially larger with each decision that is being made down the road. And you're looking at it from the outside as someone who, again, I'm not looking at the team every day, but I just see one move happening on top of the other. And I'm thinking, this is just a deck of cards.
It cannot sustain
itself over time because now you're in a spot where the one guy that you just have to keep happy, really, is Deshaun Watson outside of J.J. Watt, really, at this point. But it's certainly Deshaun Watson is priority number one, and they're not doing that. And now you have what look like to be salary cap problems, personnel discontent, culture problems, people in the front office that don't really know what their role is, and a guy who, you know, beyond taking a real deep dive in Jack Easterby, seems to be getting paid a lot to do things that he's maybe not qualified for.
And the things that he is qualified to do are completely sabotaged by the fact that he's doing all those other things. Like, you can't, if you're the, the guy, you know how it is. It's like, if you were talking to, like, let's say you're going to see a therapist and the therapist told you, by the way, everything you tell me, I'm going to be telling your boss. Like, what are you going to do? You're not going to just freely speak like your mind to that person. And yet that's the only thing that Jack Easterby was really lauded for coming in here, was his way with working guys through their issues. There are a lot of people, including, okay, by the way, because I got to bring this back to Deshaun. So Caserio is qualified, but if I'm Deshaun, I'm looking at it like, well, okay, I know you guys, the Texans hired a search firm to go out and look for people. And like, I assume maybe at some point you'd be looking at some of these other candidates, all these people who were not from New England. And then maybe you chat with me about it. It's not just that they didn't chat with Deshaun about it. It's that they doubled down on New England culture without chatting with him about it. And I think that's where, if I'm Deshaun looking at that, I feel, and I'm a young athlete making $39 million a year. I'm my organization's best employee. I know a lot of the old guard is going to say, well, look, players shouldn't be making those decisions. But if I'm Deshaun Watson, I'm going to look at the plight of, say, Aaron Rodgers a few years ago, where Aaron Rodgers' numbers were really on a vast decline under Mike McCarthy. And Aaron Rodgers, it looked like the Packers were going to be wasting the last few years of Aaron Rodgers' physical prime because Mike McCarthy is just not a good football coach. So what is Aaron Rodgers supposed to do in that situation? You know, if Deshaun can prevent himself from becoming an Aaron Rodgers where the next coach or the next GM run his career off the rails for like the actual physical prime of Deshaun's career, I don't see an issue in voicing a complaint about it. But now that you've given Nick Caserio a contract that makes him, I believe, the third highest paid general manager in the league. I don't know what you do with it. And Caserio sits down at the press conference and says, hey, Jack Easterby and him are very good friends. A couple times he referenced how Jack Easterby has helped him through situations in his life. I mean, Jack Easterby is tunneled in there. And the movie that comes to mind, Drew, is Rain Man, where you've got Dustin Hoffman, has autism, has obviously no, like he has severe autism. He's way out there on the spectrum. So he obviously has no people skills whatsoever. He's institutionalized, and along comes a very selfish, a very highly ambitious Tom Cruise.
Is Easterby Rain Man in this?
No. Okay. Belichick or Caserio would be Rain Man. Because they're the very, very analytically minded, but don't have people skills. Okay. But then along comes Tom Cruise, who's a lot of personality. You know, Tom Cruise looks, and he's also kind of a selfish, somewhat spurious ethics and a very ambitious. I think ambitious is the right word if we're going to keep the analogy up. So a very ambitious young guy, and he sees a way that perhaps he can use Dustin Hoffman's character. And Dustin Hoffman doesn't know any better. He just goes along with it. I feel like Belichick and Caserio in this scenario are kind of like that Dustin Hoffman character, where they lack the people skills to understand that the guy that's supposed to help them with the people skills doesn't have good people skills himself. And now we've got this huge mess of a situation where Deshaun Watson may genuinely 100% ask for a trade. And the Texans don't have to grant it, but hey, Patriots way, got to get rid of the malcontents, all that stuff. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think there's going to be more of a soap opera here than I thought there would be when all of this first started coming to a head a few days ago.
I think what's interesting about that analogy too is that it really highlights people who are built that way naturally and skilled, you know, have skills like he seems to have, are just disinterested in doing the relationship management and those parts of the role. They shouldn't be. That shouldn't be their role. So they I think can put a premium on those talents in other people because they look at it and go, God, he's just doing all the things that I just don't have time for and just don't feel like doing.
Right.
And then naturally, when you say, yeah, we've won a handful of titles at this play, you know, in this franchise by doing it this way. So clearly that we should be paying someone like that a premium to do those things. And it does work. And when you're outside of that, maybe that bubble, sometimes you're looking at it and you're thinking, especially like you said earlier, as a player, that is just, to me, I mean, I had been around guys like that too, even, you know, at ASU and then later in Houston and, you know, affiliated with other organizations, even professionally, where you see guys coming in from the outside and you're thinking, yeah, that's not going to work on me.
Yeah.
And it's just aren't seeing that it is just, there's not really much of a value on that. The value really is coming from your peers. It's coming from really people on the staff for the most part, and maybe a couple of the guys in the front office, but that kind of shtick is just not super effective. It reads to me as sort of a weekend motivational speaker approach,
right,
which is just like not overly valued.
I was talking to a guy who's been in the NFL for a few decades, so he's seen it all. And he was talking about, like, now that he's a grizzled, like becoming an older guy, the thing that drives him insane is, and I think he's a personnel guy, I don't know if I said that, the thing that drives him insane these days is that he gets these kids that he says, it's like, you can tell they just watch like 8 TED Talks on YouTube every time they come in the room. And it's like all this big talk about all these grand things we can do and how we can redefine paradigms and we can think outside the box. And you're like, all right, that's all well and good, but we've got some work to do today. You can't be revolutionary in 8 different directions all the time. You've got to, you've got to have a very focused, if you're going to break the paradigm or what have you, you got to be very focused in how you do it. And that goes for a lot of things, whether it's technology or anything else, you know, like Tesla with the automobile, he does Elon Musk is pretty careful in just like how many innovations they have. You know, it's not like you can have 400 innovations on every time you roll out a new vehicle. You got to have a few big innovations, and that's enough to push it forward. But if you try to do everything all at once, the damn vehicle would fall apart.
Well, I mean, yeah, there, that's a great point. There are figures who, you know, in sports or outside of it, that have that kind of just a bottomless well of like inspirational energy. And there are a handful of them. And I think, you know, there are guys in football who seem to have it. I think of Dabo Sweeney sometimes, and who's kind of like the antithesis in a lot of ways, at least on the surface, to like a Nick Saban. But they're still doing all of the other things. I mean, they're still doing all of just the standard day-to-day boring 9-to-5, breaking down film, generating reports, figuring out what tendencies are. Like, and that's really what's kind of winning it, because I mean, I don't know what your experience was, but anytime I got those speeches, I mean, I was definitely ready to run through a wall. And then 30 seconds later, that wears off.
Yeah.
I mean, after the first play, that's over. That right. just is not part of the formula to winning, really, outside of that. And I don't want to discount it, because maybe in those critical moments, it does make a difference in one or two games a season. It does matter. I'm not going to say it does nothing, but it's just not what the biggest problem, I would think, in a place like Houston is right now. I don't think that's the problem. It seems like more like getting rid of one of the best receivers in the NFL for nothing. Seems right. like a bigger problem than that.
So this is where it all comes to a head. And this is what I'm going to do. We'll talk about this for a few more minutes. And then I think what I'll do is I'll end up taking all the questions that people gave me on Twitter and do a whole separate episode with that, so this thing doesn't run too long. But the big issues would be, okay, A, wait a second, he just signed a new deal. Is that even tradable? The answer is yes, it's very tradable, just based on how the structure is. His new money doesn't really kick in until 2022. So if the Texans were to trade him this year, it would be about like a $20 million cap hit, but the total amount would end up, the net extra hit would be $5 or $6 million. So it's a manageable cap hit, especially if you're getting back question number two, which is how much? Like, how much are you going to get back? And man, these are the two scenarios. One is, okay, this never happens because a guy like Deshaun Watson is too valuable to his organization. And two, the organization that would have to trade for Deshaun Watson, it's almost, they'd have to give up so much to get Deshaun Watson that you end up in a situation where you're wasting Deshaun Watson for a few years. So what the hell is the actual right price for Deshaun Watson? I think at the very least, you're looking at 3 first round picks, a couple of viable veteran players, and then a whole bunch of other picks. I mean, and that honestly still feels a little shy.
Right.
The other thing would be, and this is the only other scenario that I think would make any sense at all, and I don't think this is going to happen, but a team like Jacksonville, who has the number one overall pick and is in line to take Trevor Lawrence, maybe they would rather say, all right, you know what? Our fans have suffered long enough and we've got cap space. We can be aggressive in other places. Maybe we trade the number one overall pick, and the Texans can start in with Trevor Lawrence, and the Texans can hope that Trevor Lawrence doesn't like pull a John Elway. I don't know what Trevor Lawrence, if he plays baseball or not, but the Texans can hope that Trevor Lawrence isn't freaked out by this weird situation and he comes there. I honestly don't think either of those are likely, but this is the Houston Texans, and the Texans have done some really, really weird stuff that the Texans owner, Cal McNair, has approved of in the last few years. Do any of those make any sense to you?
I mean, A, no, they seem insane to me, truly. But it's sort of one of these things where the fact that you're even talking about it is just a giant red flag on, you know, the status of the health of your organization. The fact that you're even talking about it is just not inspiring a ton of confidence.
It's a black swan situation.
Yeah,
and also, I'm glad you know, when you mentioned earlier about all those, when you're watching, you're looking at each decision in a vacuum and it seems kind of weird, you know, when you're on the outside looking in. I think when you're on the inside, like when Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby on the inside, I think with each decision, they're like somebody who watches the stock market too closely. You know, right. you start to get too involved in every single little moment, and you start deluding yourself into thinking like, well, you know what? If this works out, it could actually be a boon to us. You know, it makes sense if it works out. And at no point did they step back and say, wait a second, we keep making decision after decision that is like, oh, okay, it's cool if it just works out. And just like in the financial markets, like if you were thinking that way back in 2005, 2006, all of a sudden, let's say you're buying a whole bunch of REITs, the real estate investment trusts, and all the other, the debt collateralized, what was it? Collateralized debt out, the CDOs, the collateralized debt obligations and everything. Because, hey, it all makes sense. Look, it's got this great yield. It's going to be good. Just think of the pie in the sky. And then all of a sudden, you find yourself trying to sell off all this real estate that you bought at 25 cents on the dollar. Yeah, you would never do it until you screwed yourself so bad that that's the corner you're in. And I wonder if the Texans have just, I wonder if they've traded their way into this corner at this moment where they might end up doing the unthinkable, which is trading away a quarterback that takes sometimes two or three decades to find. It could be two more decades before you find yourself another quarterback like Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. As someone who just loves watching that guy play too. I mean, it's been bizarre to see him play the way he has on a team that generally has had a pretty bad offense, you know, but I mean, to see a team that also looks at that offense and thinks, you know, we don't really need these receivers and our offensive line is doing great is a bizarre take. So it seems completely reasonable that they would make a move like that. And that's what's just so confounding about it.
The only ray of light would be that, okay, Nick Caserio hopefully was smart in that. Like, hopefully Bill O'Brien, if the Texans have been able to sign Nick Caserio originally, presumably a lot of these really bad moves wouldn't have even happened because the GM is there. Like, that's why the GM is there, right? That's why the head coach and the GM aren't the same person, because the coach always wants his candy now. He always wants, like, no, I need an offensive tackle. I need him now. And Caserio could have said, all right, well, just hold on a second, buddy. There's time. You know, like, I got to get rid of Jadeveon Clowney. I got to get rid of him now. Well, just hold on a second. At the very least, if you trade him for a third rounder, don't pay half his salary as well. Like, by the way, that trade ultimately, because Clowney's play has gone down, I think sometimes people forget that Clowney was coming off of a very good season, and it's not his value then was different than it is now. And again, it was just one decision that was curious amongst many other curious decisions.
Yeah, just a whole lot of dominoes that sort of fell out of order. I mean, in a vacuum, you're looking at it and thinking, you can't make any of these escalating decisions, the very least of which being even considering or entertaining, you know, Deshaun Watson being traded somewhere else without knowing who the coach is, who would be at the helm of any of that. I mean, how can you possibly make that move, let alone the prospect of being with a division rival, without knowing who the person is that would be managing that personnel? I mean, that is wild.
And that's where I think my ray of light, the real ray of light, is that, okay, Caserio comes in, sits down, talks with Deshaun Watson, and Deshaun feels somehow different about the direction of the team, the culture, all of that stuff. I think there are guys that need to be reassured that Jack Easterby's influence isn't going to be what it was before. I think Jack Easterby has worked his way into being way, way tight with the owner. But
do you believe that? I mean, what do your instincts tell you about what's going to actually happen with Easterby? And
I think that there need to be assurances made that Easterby is going to be taking more of a supervisory role, but that also he's not going to be coming in and giving goofy speeches the night before a game, doing a lot of the stuff that, now I think Easterby's influence in the front office has to be tamped down a little bit too. And part of this is Easterby, by all accounts, did a great job doing whatever the hell he did in New England. Here, he took on way more. And that's O'Brien's fault for giving Easterby all that control, or at least all that. He had all this supervisory ability over seemingly every department. Like, every department, people over there say that he is involved in every single department in the building. And I'm not sure he's qualified to be doing that. You know, like, let's say if Jim Irsay, think about Jim Irsay, the owner of the Colts. goofiest SOB out there, but I've learned to like him over the years. If he were like flitting around from room to room and like telling the video department how to do their job and stepping into accounting and telling them how to do their job and then jumping on over and talking to the coaches how they can be the best version of themselves, it would be a mess. I feel like Jack Easterby is kind of like a super sober version of Jim Irsay.
Do you think then with Caserio being in Houston now that has all but ensured that Easterby will be with the Texans in the following season?
Or do you I want to say that, but look, I think that people thought, I mean, Bill O'Brien brought Jack Easterby in. Bill O'Brien's a guy that fought to get Jack Easterby in. And a year and a half later, Bill O'Brien was out the door. So right. If anything, honestly, I'd be more nervous about Caserio being fired than Jack Easterby. I'm like, it's freakish, man. It's some Game of Thrones type stuff. Yeah, if you watch Game of Thrones, he's a combo between Littlefinger and the High Sparrow, because there's that religious component to it as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, I guess when you put it that way, Easterby could just end up being the quarterback and Deshaun Watson would be somewhere else.
All right. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to let you go, Drew, a little bit later because we're recording this on a Sunday. I'm going to watch some football, and then I'm going to answer all the questions that people gave me on Twitter. So you can check that out. This will be episode 2 of Deshaun Watson, WTF. Good day.
Nice.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.